Hello, this is the Farms for Tomorrow podcast, and I'm your host, Cliff Scholes. I'm here today with organic no-till farmer Eric Campy. Eric started the Ann Arbor Seed Company in 2012, and in 2020 helped launch the Green Things Farm Collective with four other farmers here in Southeast Michigan. We'll be talking today about what it takes to break into farming and the changes he's made along the way to be able to keep farming. Welcome, Eric. So, if someone is thinking about setting up a farm, what are the most important considerations?
I was trying to organize in my mind some of the components that go into setting up a new farm and some of the things that people get taken by surprise. It came into these sort of four areas. They're sort of different and all important. One is access to land. That seems pretty obvious, but comes with all of its challenges. And then the other would be actually rehabilitating that land. And they seem like maybe they're the same, but they're really quite different, because when you're accessing land, you're looking for something you can afford. You're looking for something close to your market. You're looking for something that's going to fit with your plans for your farm and your life. And then it's almost a certainty that the land that you end up with will be marginal for whatever reason. It'll be marginal because it's been damaged by irresponsible farming or sort of conventional sort of extraction-based agriculture, or it'll be damaged because it was maybe never suitable for farmland in the first place. These kinds of land is what's available. I would be pretty surprised to learn of a new farmer with the resources to get something that's just really high-quality land. All the good stuff's being used. And high quality land is in terms of soil quality and ecosystem quality, but it's also closeness to your market and accessibility. And so that's two things, both of them are very central to the land that you're farming. The other two would be all the things that people think of when they think of farming, which is all the techniques of farming. How do you grow your crop? How do you grow that crop or raise that animal? And that's infinitely complicated and varied. And then the last piece, which may be the most important of them, is marketing. If you're a commodity crop grower, maybe you're just taking grain to the mill, but the small farms that I interact with, they're making their own market, and they have to for price and viability reasons. Like, you need to distinguish yourself as unique. You need to show why your produce is of a high quality, why it's worth paying someone a living wage to produce it. While your competitors, maybe competitors isn't even the right term, other farm activities are producing produce-like items without paying their workers a living wage and without caring for the land. Just the pursuit of farming and marketing is vastly complicated. That's been my experience as a new farmer here in Washtenaw County, and a lot of my peers. They throw their whole heart, soul, and effort into growing crops and marketing crops, and that's all you got. And then you're sort of blindsided when years down the line you're realizing, wow, everything's just been an uphill battle because the ecosystem of the soil is of a poor quality and it needs investment. It needs like significant just financial investment, but time investment and investment of knowledge. It's not something that a beginner may know, like we know how to go from point A to point B. How do you improve the soil? And it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. It's going to depend on your conditions. And all of this is impossible if you don't have access to land in the first place. And being able to afford land or to find land that you can rent can be really challenging for folks.
Given the fact that many new farmers have access to damaged soils and damaged land, land that either never was good for farming or wasn't very good for farming, or land that has been damaged by, you know, what you call irresponsible farming, what are some of the things that you see working for people in your farming community to pull that level up so that they don't have as much work to do?
I think it always has to be informed by your location and your space. What I'm seeing in our community is heavy clay soil that's either been mismanaged by conventional agriculture or was such a heavy clay that conventional agriculture wasn't touching it. So for us, our challenge is water. There's, you know, it rains a lot here and the water table can be high and you can do a lot of tricks to help your crops grow. But if their roots are drowning, if it's in an anaerobic soil condition, they're not going to thrive. And so the things that have helped us are building permanent raised beds, having a lot of forethought about the way water interacts with the land and how we can guide it from where it'll do harm to where it won't. And before that's achieved, you're really just resetting. You're not getting anywhere. But once the water is mostly manageable, I've been really excited about the no-till farming philosophies. And our clay soil reacts very poorly to routine disruption from mechanical tillage. I think the soil organic matter is already low, but also it's just such a heavy soil and it's so prone to compaction, which is sort of related to how it interacts with water, which is back to that problem again. And many folks incorrectly assume that tillage is helpful for compaction. You might take something that's very compact and till it to make it something that's very fluffy and not compact. But what you're doing is breaking up all the soil aggregates and you're exposing any organic matter in the soil to oxygen, which releases it. And so after that initial fluffing of the soil, it settles down harder than ever. And so that was my experience coming into this ground is obviously you have to till it and you till it and it looks great. And then it dries and hardens into these like cinder blocks or just this sheet of heavier than before. And it's like, well, you better till again. You got to keep doing it. And it becomes this frustrating treadmill. And while it could take a little while to get our heads around all this, but there's a whole alternative technique that either vastly reduces or eliminates your need for that mechanical tillage. And it mostly involves keeping the soil protected, keeping the soil under mulch or under living plant material. And without trying to go through the whole technique, we're replacing the necessity of tillage with these creative management techniques. And so, if you had to till to get rid of the weeds, well, you can get rid of the weeds through smothering them with a dark tarp or through crimping a cover crop when it will naturally terminate or through a winter kill process. Or if you were going to till because you need to reduce compaction, there are ways to simulate that in a less destructive manner, like using a broad fork, which is a slower way to kind of break up and lift the ground. Or hopefully in a longer term, that's not even necessary, because you're preserving that soil structure in life. And then all throughout, the soil's always kept covered. And it's either covered through a mulch that could be straw or leaf or really any plant-based material, or it could be compost. And that coverage protects the soil. It keeps it from becoming compacted for many different reasons, but it also keeps the weeds from germinating. And it's a material that will decompose and become more soil.
So how does this affect both your time budget and your economics, your basic bottom line farm economics? Because cover cropping, that's basically seed that you're throwing down that you're not harvesting from. So there's a cost there. I can see the benefits from that, but I also am sure that farmers are going, well, why should I plant something that I'm not going to even harvest?
Absolutely. And for that reason, we're not able to do as much cover cropping as we'd really like to. You know, like some kind of dream farm, we'd have something like 2 to 3 times the space that we need for production so that we're in a cover crop rotation constantly. But that's not where we're at. We're using every square inch of our suitable production space because we have a fair amount of acreage, but we have a very limited amount of land that, because of the interaction with the water and where we can drain properly, we have a very limited amount of land that we've put in that effort to make productive for produce. So yeah, we're very tight. And any time we could plant at least a long season cover crop, we could have planted a cash crop. You know, if I could plant an overwinter rye and vetch, I could plant garlic, same season. if I can plant a spring, you know, oats and peas, I can plant lettuce or any cool weather green.
Do those work as like cover crops? I mean, as long as there's something on the soil, does it help with some of those problems?
I think it absolutely does. Cover crops are not magic or special. They're simply crops that we choose for the primary use of benefiting our soil rather than the primary use of economic harvest. And so lettuce is a plant and rye is a plant. And if I was trying to grow a plant to use its natural ability to harvest energy from the sun and build soil, they're both doing that. But rye is such a champion of biomass and, you know, just it's such a builder. And lettuce is kind of flimsy, but they're both doing it, absolutely. And so what you're saying about timing and economics is at the absolute heart of a farm trying to build itself as a profitable operation. And at a small scale, I think cover crops deserve a lot of attention. But at a small scale, it makes more economic sense to import carbon in the form of compost or mulch and to have these quicker turnovers so that you can get two or three cash crops out of a single plantable bed space rather than having a longer-term cover crop rotation. And then maybe the longer-term goal is to have enough space for that rotation. I think it just has to match your operation.
You're a longtime seed grower. Is there any possibility for reducing your costs by growing out cover crops to the point where you can actually harvest and replant in areas where you want to have them?
Yes, that's complicated too. Seed is often cheap. And so your ability to grow your own seed for your own use, a lot of cover crop seed, you know, if you've got a good small combine handy, and you can grow your own cover crop and sort of manage that, there's not going to be any complicated technique needed. You're going to combine that and then it's ready for use. You don't have to clean it that well. You're just throwing it back in as cover crop seed. But as often as not, you might as well just buy it. And that's something that frustrates me to say as a seed grower, because I really do think folks should save more of their own seed. And there is definitely value in having it from your own production. You know, it becomes your baby. It becomes adapted to your techniques and your soil and your region. And it gives you that security. No one can take that away from you. And that's all valuable. It's one of those things, though. It's like you got to have the right tool up. You got to be able to do it at a scale that makes sense. And after you've paid for all that, you almost could just get it from Albert Lea pretty affordably. And we're even finding that with some of the seed crops that we grow for sale. Some of it's produced so cheaply on the national market that, like, yeah, I can grow my own seed for arugula, but man, I can't produce it as cheaply by the pound as I can buy it. And that's crazy to me. That's just one example. Most of the seed that we grow, seed can be pretty explosively productive. And so if you get a harvest, you usually have such an abundance that it very much is worth your while. It's just one of those things of we exist in such a complicated agricultural economy. It'd be like a small market gardener growing their own onions. Like, please do. Onions are amazing. I love growing my own onions. Honestly, it's one of my favorite crops. And they're so cheap at the grocery store that sometimes you're just like, well, maybe I should just grow tomatoes and herbs and greens that are expensive and lower quality at the store, at least.
This kind of circles us back around to the marketing aspect, because local kind of became cachet in the last decade or so. Are you seeing people who will say, hey, these onions aren't from California, but I put a value on them specifically because they're from this local grower who I have a relationship with? Or is there still some value from the customer's perspective that you're kind of sensing through your marketing efforts for crops that might not make as much economic sense, just in the narrow sense of price?
There absolutely is. And it's all better. Like, an onion isn't an onion, you know. I've become a produce snob since I've been growing my own for so long now. And whenever I have to buy something at the store, even like fancy stuff, I get so frustrated with it. an onion is such a humble thing. Like, it's so ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's a good storage crop. They're not expensive. But yeah, you can grow your own onion that's better. But because of that sort of market reality or whatever, as a salesperson, which, like we talked about earlier, that's one of the big pieces that might be the most important part of a farm, it's a more uphill battle to convince. And we grow onions and we sell them at market and people buy them and they really appreciate them. Maybe it's not the perfect example because it does work in our model, but it's harder to make that marketing pitch. So if we were to go to a fancy business school and take like the first intro course lesson on small business, and I said, well, I want to grow onions and sell onions, they would say, oh, well, that's great. So onion is your product. And to come up with a price to market your product, you'll have to understand your inputs and your expenses and your labor and all of your costs to produce that onion, and then come up with a price and then compare that to what the market will bear. And what happens so often in agriculture, the what the market will bear is the only piece of the equation that anyone pays any attention to, because first of all, it's easier. And second of all, they're usually so vastly disconnected that that's the one you come up with. It's sort of a goal to have really good records so you know all of your cost of production. But most small farms haven't had the time to come up with those numbers, or at least really good numbers for that. And so when they're selling their onion, they're saying, well, you know, this is what we got at the farmer's market. This is what an organic onion goes for at Whole Foods, with maybe little awareness of really the cost to grow it themselves. So when I sell an onion, am I losing money? It's possible. I hope not. It's sort of crazy, like from a business point of view. So I don't want to be no heart and all dollar, but I also like want to do this next year because I do love the work of farming and bringing food to our community. And to continue with that, I have to know, am I able to make a living and am I able to pay my crew enough to keep doing it?